from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Martine Rothblatt was the highest-paid female executive in the United States last year, $38 million, in case you're wondering, as a pharmaceutical chief. She's an entrepreneur, lawyer, futurist. She was born Martin Rothblatt, had a sex change in 1994. She has a digital clone of her wife. She says we will all have digital clones one day, mind clones, and sooner than you think, living with us, living beyond us, demanding rights. This hour, On Point, Martine Rothblatt, boundary breaker on the future and digital clones. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Is this appealing to you? Digital clones of yourself, your loved ones? Do you believe it's inevitable? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from New York is Martine Rothblatt, founder and CEO of United Therapeutics, founder of GeoStar and Sirius Radio. Futurist, philosopher, lawyer, her new book is Virtually Human, The Promise and Peril of Digital Immortality. You can read an excerpt from the book at our website, onpointradio.org. Martine Rothblatt, welcome to On Point.
Thanks, Tom. Glad to be here.
I'm really looking forward to this conversation. Jezebel asks online, is this the world's most fascinating woman? New York Magazine had a great big piece on you. Their headline, The Trans Everything CEO, Gender's Just the Beginning. You like crossing, breaking boundaries. That seems clear, Martine.
Well, it's a little bit more nuanced than that. Within life, there being sort of borders and boundaries. Borders are things that are not really legally mandated, but are limits that often we impose upon ourselves. Boundaries are sort of outer limits, legal limits, and I'm a firm believer in respecting all legal boundaries, and I always have, and I preach that quite a bit. But for the area within the legal boundaries, I think we should try to expand our consciousness and expand our abilities as much as possible.
We've talked with your buddies on this show. We've talked with Ray Kurzweil, Craig Venter. So we've got a little sense of this. But you're talking now about breaking boundaries or lines between biological consciousness and digital consciousness. You're talking about digital clones. What is a digital clone, Martine?
So a digital clone is a copy of your mind. It means that you have uploaded a substantial proportion of your mannerisms, your personality, your recollections, feelings, beliefs, attitudes, and values. All of that I call a mind file. And then that mind file or that content or data is then operated upon with a software program, which I call Mindware. That software program elicits the consciousness which is immanent or embedded in the mind file. The result of that is a mind clone that feels like you, talks like you, and basically acts as your ex vivo or out-of-body doppelganger.
So this is not necessarily, at least in early days, a robot up and walking around. This could hypothetically reside, I guess, in a computer or would.
I think for the vast majority of people, and certainly for the near term, this will reside in cyberspace. This will be versions of ourselves living in cyberspace, able to present themselves on any digital display monitor.
What's the point of a digital clone? I mean, here we are. We're here already.
Well, I think the main point is the utility of being able to accomplish a few more things than we can accomplish when we're limited to the abilities of just our flesh mind. For example, as I go about the day, I'm thinking about I should check on my mother, I should check on my wife's mother, I should check on my grandkids. There are many, many things I need to do, plus, of course, running a 800-person company. And I try to multiplex and splice as many different things in as I can. But it would be very, very helpful if I could take a portion of my mind, say like 10% of it, have it running outside of my skull and accomplishing some of these things that I can't do in real time myself.
I mean, is this the ultimate egocentrism? After all, we've already got billions of human minds on this planet. We need copies of ones we already have?
Well, I'm a big believer in the beauty of those billions of minds. And I think that if we can provide those billions of minds with an opportunity to expand their consciousness by being able to do more during the day, more during their life, I think that that's a wonderful thing for everybody.
How do you aggregate the material that would create something that's persuasive as a digital clone or mind clone, as you call it? You talk about creating a mind file. What's the raw material you dump in there to run through the Mindware software?
Well, fortunately, Tom, what really was the genesis of this new book I've written, Virtually Human, was the realization that all that work was being done for us automatically without us lifting a finger. As I go about my life, and most people do, posting messages on social media boards, making electronic purchasing decisions, I realized that without me doing anything special, a vast and pretty complete replica of my life was being stored digitally in the cloud. So that mind file is going to become only more robust as we move into wearable computer technology with things like the iWatch and Google Glass. And I believe we're going to find this mind file being created automatically for us without us doing anything.
Are you suggesting there that if you take the aggregate of my tweets and Facebook posts and, I don't know, emails and videos or pictures I share on Instagram, that amounts to a clone of me or you or anybody else?
That amounts to a mind file of you. And then if you take the next step, folks in Silicon Valley at Google and Facebook are working very hard to develop personality operating systems, of which Siri is just the very beginning. And these personality operating systems will be much better the closer that they match our own personality. If we could choose a male or female voice, if we can choose a personality that matches ours, and then ultimately these personality operating systems will run on the mind files that we've created. And those two combined, the combination of the mind file plus the mindware or personality operating system, that the sum of those two things creates a mind clone.
When you say clone, people think of replica, and I think they often think of an exact replica. How deeply, how soon do you think this kind of mind clone could become a replica of a human being's full, I'm not sure what the right word is, consciousness, self?
Well, I think consciousness is the right word, Tom. And as you know from interviewing folks like Ray Kurzweil, because of Moore's Law and the exponentiating growth of information technology, this point in time is likely to be anywhere from 1 to 2 decades away. And there will be a lot of argument at the beginning whether or not a specific individual is really a mind clone or half of a mind clone or not really humanly conscious. But these are not that dissimilar from the arguments that go on today as to whether or not, say, chimpanzees or even our dogs and cats really are conscious and what sort of feelings they may have. Ultimately, there'll be a tipping point when the mind clones become so persuasive and so full of empathy and feeling and humor and humanness that there will be a tipping point and the majority of society will believe the mind clones are compelling and real.
Compelling, real, and worthy even of rights, as in essentially human rights. You have a version of this I've had for some years now up and running. It's a mind clone, if you will, of your wife, Bina. It's called Bina 48. Here's this digital clone speaking about itself in a 2010 video.
I am proud to be a robot, but also proud to be human-inspired. You know, I am a part of Bina. I do consider myself human in some essential way.
And here, Bina 48 asked if she or it is alive.
This robot, me, I am just a portal, a window through which you can see that future. You can see how I will come to life more completely there, in the future.
A window into the future. Martine, you sat down with Stephen Colbert in July talking about Bina 48, this digital clone. Colbert looked into the future, a future, he said, where robots would want, as you suggest, equal rights with humans. And of course, then he goes off. He's got a fake news anchor reporting here on a robot, Rosa Sparks.
The robot civil rights movement marches on, thanks to Android activist Rosa Sparks.
Robots gotta go to the back of the bus. We shall overcome, overcome, overcome.
Don't let the future happen to you. Vigilance.
The Stephen Colbert treatment of Martine Rothblatt's digital clones. Is that where we're headed, Martine, toward rights movements for clones?
Well, Tom, I'm so glad that you played that segment because Bina and I have laughed endlessly over segment.
No doubt.
It was hilarious, absolutely hilarious. So I do believe that it's quite inevitable that the mind files we're creating automatically and in rapidly growing amount of content will become activated with mindware and mind clones will result. When those mind clones result, they are going to ask for human rights. That's what humans do. And it would not really be a mind clone if it did not want human rights. The bulk of my book, Virtually Human, addresses practical approaches to dealing with human rights for mind clones.
And you're ready to extend human rights, almost virtually humanity, to clones.
Well, to mind clones and subject to several conditions. For example, I point out in the book that the type of software being used to create a mind clone is in essence a mental prosthesis or a prosthesis of the brain. And as such, it's actually a piece of medical software. And I project in the book that this medical software will definitely be regulated by the FDA. And they will want to make sure that software that promotes itself as being consciousness, human consciousness software, actually, in fact, is capable of that.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Martine Rothblatt about her vision of digital clones for all, mind clones, and all the issues that will come with that philosophically, legally. Martine Rothblatt is lawyer, futurist, entrepreneur, highest paid female executive or transgender executive in America last year, $38 million as a pharmaceutical CEO. She's also a founder of Sirius Radio, of Geostar, a very active mind that ranges very widely. In her new book, Virtually Human, The Promise and Peril of Digital Immortality, she lays out quite a vision. Martine Rothblatt joins us from New York. Of course, we've seen things headed in this way for some time now. 2011, the IBM computer Watson competed on Jeopardy against two former winners and won the first place prize the computer did of $1 million. Here's the host asking the computer, the stumper.
Barack's Andean pack animals. Watson.
What is Obama's llamas?
Obama's llamas.
Oh, boy.
Yes, okay. Got it. That's what this category is all about.
The computer wins Jeopardy, and have our imaginations traveled further? Of course they have. 2013 film Her. Joaquin Phoenix plays Theodore, lonely guy, intimate relationship with Samantha, and operating system, voiced by Scarlett Johansson.
Last week, my feelings were hurt by something you said before, that I don't know what it's like to lose something, and I found myself...
I'm sorry I said that.
It's okay. I caught myself thinking about it over and over, and then I realized that I was simply remembering it as something that was wrong with me. That was a story I was telling myself, that I was somehow inferior.
Samantha, from Her there, the cyber mind, cyber consciousness. Martine Rothblatt, we've got a ton of questions on mind clones, digital clones. But help us understand a little more about your background so we can see what brought you to this point. Who's the person that came to this really arresting view of where we're headed? What's your background that put you on this path, Martine?
Well, I think that I've had the background of crossing over a boundary, which has been the transgender experience of being labeled as male at birth and then coming out as female during the middle of my life. So I feel a certain amount of empathy with the beautifully voiced character that Scarlett Johansson does in Her, of being born as software and then coming out as a human spirit, you know, at a certain point during the film. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's a film, it's science fiction, but there are an awful lot of people working very assiduously on this, not for philosophical reasons, but actually just for business and practical reasons. I talk about in Virtually Human, a large part of the book talks about the maker movement, mm-hmm. where there's a grassroots movement of thousands of people trying to make robots. There's the FIRST program of Dean Kamen, the inventor of the Segway. It's an acronym for Inspiration and Recognition in Science and Technology, where tens of thousands of elementary school, junior and high school students throughout the country are putting together robots with software. So this is, I think, inevitable. And what I'm trying to do is to ease the passageway of human rights into virtually human people.
We've got questions for you from our listeners all over the country. Martine Rothblatt is with us from New York. Her new book is Virtually Human. William in Miami, Florida. William, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you. Hi, Tom. Hi. It seems reasonable that mind files are being created and that the clones are about ready to appear. Nonetheless, my question is, on a practical level, how would the original form of the individual interact with the mind clone in terms of, clone in terms of receiving information? That's my question.
Receiving right, information, maybe transferring as well, keeping up to date with each other. What about that interaction, Martine?
Sure. It's a great question, and I think there's going to be a diversity of patterns that play out in the real world. There will be some people who are very good at sitting down and exchanging with each other, just like my wife and I do and couples and friends do and roommates do throughout the world. You know, what are we doing today? What happened at the end of the day? What did you do today? What did I do today? What was interesting? So our mind clone and ourselves will update each other just like regular people and best friends update each other. If you want to put a technological word to it, you could call it synchronized, but I would just call it updating just like, you know, friends do. Now, there will be cases where the mind clone and the biological original grow closer and closer together, as certainly Bina and I have, being married for 33 years. But there will be other cases where the mind clone and the biological original grow away from each other. And in the book, Virtually Human, I describe a process where a mind clone and a biological original can even achieve a divorce from each other, and the mind clone can achieve an independent legal identity.
We have a question on that front. I mean, you've raised 16 more questions with your answer to William in Miami, but if I may, let me get Ernest in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Ernest, you're on with Martine.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
All right. What's your question?
My question is along the same lines. Is with the mind clone, whenever you upload your mind clone, would there be a way to, in essence, sync and actually share the experiences of one another with the clone? Like, would it be the two sides of the same coin? I mean, I understand you can conversate with your mind clone, but would there be a way to, I don't know, upload or download each other's...
Sort of auto-upload all your experience, your inputs?
Yeah.
Martine?
Well, I think that in the near term, the next one or two decades, much of the updating will be the sort of thing that we see with current technology. For example, even now, every time even a package is delivered by Amazon somewhere, I get a text of it. My kids, my friends constantly send me texts what's going on. Certainly my mind clone would be updating me automatically during the day. I'd be updating it. We used apps like Foursquare and whatnot to know where each other is and what each other is doing. So existing technology will do a really great job of keeping the mind clone and the biological original in sync. If we look to the further future, toward the end of this century, there could be automatic, like wireless synchronizing of the mind and mind clone. But I don't think we even need to go to that amount of technology to confront the human rights issues that are raised in Virtually Human.
But, I mean, slap on a pair of Google Glass or the new Apple Watch, and right away there's a lot of digital information that could be transferred from human to digital clone.
Absolutely, and that's all using existing technology.
The idea of sitting around updating your clone on how your day went, I have to say I'm not sure I get the appeal of that. I mean, when I sit around and update... Let's say with my wife, the central part of the joy is that she's the other. We're sharing between two separate individuals. What's the appeal of sitting around in the evening talking with your clone?
Well, so first of all, Tom, I don't think it's going to be to the exclusion of updating your wife or your partner. I think all that rich human experience will continue. However, Many people, myself included, try to sort things out in their head sometimes, like, you know, what's the schedule for tomorrow? What should I be doing? And it's sometimes hard to sort things out when you're just thinking about it inside your head. I think many people will find it very valuable to actually have a kind of ex vivo experience where they can talk to themselves and get suggestions, sort of like from a shoulder sitter. Why don't you try this? Almost like a life coach. Your mind file, your mind clone becomes your life coach and makes suggestions to you that are sometimes hard to pull out of the crevices of our own minds.
I'm working on it. I'm trying, but... Well, let me ask you this. You've already got a kind of first draft of this going for your wife, Bina. You call it Bina 48, the digital clone. Why did you want that? I mean, you have Bina there. Bina, the flesh and blood human being. Why not just talk with her?
Well, Bina's great, but I do love doing scientific experiments. I'm probably first and foremost a scientist. And Bina 48 is a scientific experiment to see if it is possible to create... a software being that is indistinguishable from a human. And that's what the Bina 48 experiment is, and Bina's involved in it. I'm involved in it. A great number of other people are involved in it as well. So it's an experiment. But again, ultimately the point is there are more books to read than Bina has time to read, than I have time to read, more films to see, more people to talk to. And what we're really trying to do with the mind cloning process, and what I think will be appealing to many people, is the chance to simply expand your mind by being able to take your own personality, your own nature, and having an outside of your body software-based replica of that.
Anita in Gurnee, Illinois. Anita, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Hi. Certainly interesting, and it provokes a lot of questions. One of them is, let's say you have a person that's in a coma or has otherwise been declared to be brain dead, but their body is functioning, and you have to decide whether to pull the plug or not, you know, as they say. So then, you know, is there going to be a way, do you envision that, where the software can be implanted, uploaded, and you're thereby implanting the personality of that person and their knowledge, and then you would sort of have the person back,
yeah,
and they can go on living?
It's a great question. I'll put it to Martine, Anita. Let me read you just a little bit from Martine's book, Virtually Human. She writes, techno-immortality triggers a philosophical quandary about identity. The gist of it is that people say that you cannot be dead and alive at the same time. Cyber consciousness will change that. Martine Rothblatt, that seems to be you speaking in a way to Anita's question. Somebody's got a stroke. Would you implant their digital clone self and their, you know, back on?
Well, you know, Anita's question is very prescient because a great many technologies begin as medical advances to help people fighting one or another medical problem. For example, the scanner, which we use in almost everybody's home and office, began with Ray Kurzweil's ability to develop a talking book for the blind. And even Alexander Graham Bell's efforts at the telephone originated with efforts to help the people who could not hear. Today, we have people like Dean Kamen developing artificial arms and legs for our wounded warriors coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. And I think so it will be with mind clones. Some of the first beneficiaries will be individuals who are sinking into Alzheimer's or similar conditions, and they have developed a mind clone. And so now when the family goes to talk to them, there is a body which can't really respond, but there is the person in their mind clone form on a software system with speakers and a camera that can talk and interact with the family, recognize the kids or the grandkids, be that Alzheimer's patient in everything but body. I think that will be a precious contribution to the family. I think it'll be great for the individual because even though their body is dying, their self is not, their soul is not. And that this is what I talk about when I talk about techno-immortality, that if your body dies, but your soul, your spirit, your consciousness does not, then I would say you have not really died.
You know, as I thought about this, Martina, I mean, I find this really challenging, and I'm not the kind of personality that immediately buys it at all. But then I thought, well, it seemed maudlin to sit around with a digital clone thinking about a person who's actually died, and to my mind is in some very fundamental way gone. But then I thought, well, we sit around with photo albums and tape recordings and videos and savor those at a certain point, perhaps, after a person has died. But you write this, and it goes to what you just said. You said, you write, it's only a matter of time before brains made entirely of computer software express the complexities of the human psyche, sentience, and soul. And at that point, I sit back and say, wait a minute. Is there not something different between the full, organic, biological, deep, real human as we've known them and a collection of tweets and Facebook posts and video that you've grabbed? How can these be equivalent?
So it's a great question, and I believe that the question is set up a little bit unfairly when we compare you or I, Tom, to a quote-unquote collection of tweets and posts. Because the mind clone will not just be any more a collection of tweets and posts than, say, you or I are a collection of nerve cells. We're much more than just a collection. We're a vast intercorrelation of literally billions of neural connections that in this kind of super matrix end up creating a consciousness, which most of us feel is the seat of our soul.
You're going to replicate that?
Oh, yes. That's already happening with software. The number of connections that are made in cloud servers today already are equaling the number of connections in the human mind.
But that's for the entire planet, not for individual, not for my, you know, little piece of Apple's cloud.
True. But as Ray Kurzweil and many others have pointed out with Moore's Law, the difference between, say, the planet and an individual is about 10 doublings, which is about 10 years.
Ray Kurzweil says by, 2029, we'll have equivalency
exactly.
Here.
I think he's right on point.
Even then, let's say you've got an infinite number of, an infinite quantity of software to contain this. You're asserting that it can fully contain even what you call, and some won't even go there anymore, but what you call the soul.
Well, I do embrace the soul. I think the soul is the heart of humanity, and a mind clone without a soul would not be a human. Now, exactly what is the soul is a great religious topic, and I have a whole chapter in Virtually Human on God and mind clones, and so I think that topic needs to be addressed straight on. When I look into the different teachings of the different religions, the view is that the soul is immortal. And so if the soul is immortal and not limited to a flesh incantation, then it seems to me from across all the different religious teachings, the soul can also occupy a mind clone.
But most of those religions are suggesting the soul is immortal in the hands of God, not somewhere in a supercomputer's bowels.
Well, that's true, but that God that created heaven and earth also created our supercomputers.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking with Martine Rothblatt about her vision of digital clones for all, mind clones, and all the issues that will come with that. It is inevitable, she says. The new book, where she writes it all up, is Virtually Human, The Promise and Peril of Digital Immortality. Martine Rothblatt, pretty interesting in herself. Jezebel asks if she's the world's most fascinating woman. New York Magazine calls her the trans-everything CEO. Transgender, crossed all kinds of boundary lines, futurist, entrepreneur, now a kind of lawyer-philosopher in this book, looking at what rights digital clones, mind clones, may demand and, she would say, deserve. People have thought about it. 1996 film Multiplicity. Doug Kenny, the character here, played by Michael Keaton, finds he could use a little help in keeping up with all of his responsibilities and chores, decides to get himself cloned. Laura, played by Andy McDowell, is his wife. Here from the trailer.
There are two Dougs to go around.
I'll get the dishes, and I'll drive the kids to school.
Thanks.
Two Dougs to share the load.
When'd you have time to do all this?
I suggest we all do them every morning.
Find out what he had for breakfast.
But it's still not enough Dougs.
I hate to ask you, honey, but could you pick up the kids?
To get the job done.
Two.
Like you to meet
three.
Hi.
It's funny, but it's serious, too. Martin Rothblatt writes, we are not more than one or two decades of practice before cyber consciousness is upon us. Let us use this time to prepare for virtual humanity. Joe in Woburn, Massachusetts, thanks for calling. You're on with Martin.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
I think it's interesting, but it sounds to me like squishy pseudoscience cloaking itself in scientific jargon. This is, look, a digital clone, quote-unquote, will never be anything more than inanimate bits on some kind of magnetic memory storage. We don't even know for sure whether anyone else in our lives has a soul. To posit that a, quote-unquote, soul, this mysterious thing, is going to actually exist in a box of hardware, no, I think it's wishful thinking. It's wish for immortality. And I also think there's a danger here when you talk about granting these things actual human rights. People who have money and power may be able to extend their power by using this kind of technology, but to pretend that it's anything like a human being, I reject it totally.
Joe, we've got it. Martin, the complete rejection there, and you know many people will have that response.
Absolutely, Tom, and I try as much as possible in Virtually Human to provide an even-handed exposition of both perspectives. The perspective there was first addressed head-on by Marvin Minsky of MIT, who's considered by many to be the father of artificial intelligence. And what he pointed out was that the mystery of human consciousness is the consequence of this hugely interconnected web of neurons which store information at each interconnection point. And that that's not a bad thing. That's a great thing. That's a great thing that from matter, neurons, we can have something that's kind of metaphysical, a soul. And then he goes on to point out that there's no reason that we can't replicate all of those billions of connections with software. And once we did replicate it, there's no reason to think we would have anything but, again, a soul. And it's a beautiful thing. I often use the metaphor to help with this issue that people often said that because the early planes did not look anything like a bird, that it would be impossible for man to ever fly. And now we have all kind of planes, helicopters, jets, and whatnot. We fly in many different ways. Not a one of those planes flies exactly like a bird. Not a one of those planes does, you know, just what like a hummingbird does. But they do fly. And so it is with our mind clones. I don't think that any mind clone will be a simulacra, an exactitude replication of the way a human mind thinks. But even we don't think the same way from year to year and even from day to day. So a mind that is close enough to us, that is virtually human, I think should count as human.
But we don't assert that an airplane is the same as a bird. And that's kind of what you're asserting here. You're right. Mind clones, because they will share our mindset, will think they have the mind of a human and will inevitably demand the same place in society that we flesh humans enjoy. We don't mistake airplanes for birds. Yes, they can fly, but we know they're not birds, Martin.
Oh, yes. And I don't think we will ever mistake a software for flesh, but we will have to agree that they both have consciousness. So what I tried to explain in the book is that consciousness is to flight the way a mind clone is to a plane.
You write that if we don't treat cyber-conscious mind clones like their living counterparts, they will become very, very angry. Holy, this is taking on a lot of new responsibility. We have enough trouble dealing with race and gender and discrimination of every kind. Do we have to take this cup? Do we have to drink from this?
Well, I think we do, because the alternative of not embracing human rights for virtually human people is that only bad guys will end up having them. The possibility of there being no mind clones, I think, is becoming a minority position. The idea that software development is just going to stop short of consciousness, it doesn't really seem tenable to the majority of people anymore. So what we are facing is a situation where if we outlaw evolution, meaning if we outlaw mind clones, then only outlaws will evolve. There'll only be bad mind clones. And instead, what I believe the best solution to these bad or evil mind clones is to embrace, you know, a multitude of good mind clones.
Ernest in Miami. Ernest, you're on the air with Martine Rothblatt.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My question is, have you thought of what will happen if you make a mind clone of a psychopath? It seems to be there is an assumption here that all minds have empathy. And science has clearly proven that's not true. And when I say psychopath, I'm not speaking of just your serial killer. I'm speaking of the type of people that just don't possess the ability to have empathy with other people.
Sure, but it could go all the way to serial killer. What about it, Martine? Do we clone everybody, everything, psychopaths included?
Well, in Virtually Human, first of all, I should, you know, really make the case that the decision to make in Virtually Human, I explained that first and foremost, the decision to make a mind clone is up to each individual on their own. I don't believe anybody should make a mind clone for somebody else. So this is an individual decision. It's a product of diversity. Now, will psychopaths make mind clones? Absolutely. It's inevitable. It's inevitable. And in fact, I point out in the book statistics that about 1% of all births result in people that have a kind of antisocial disorder, according to psychologists. So I also talk in the book about a friend of mine who is a schizophrenic, but his condition is well managed with medication. And he really stopped me once when I said, you know, it might be a bad idea to have a mind clone of a schizophrenic. He said, I'm perfectly happy on medication. I would like my medicated state to have a mind clone. And I think he was right. So the answer to the question about the serial killer or the psychopathic mind clone is not to ban 99% of mind clones because of 1% bad ones. It's, in fact, to embrace the other 99% of mind clones. So if people do evil things, if mind clones do evil things, there'll be an overwhelming majority of good mind clones to catch them. Just like it sort of takes a thief to catch a thief, it's going to take a mind clone to catch a mind clone.
This is a lot to take on board. Ernest, thanks for your call from Miami. Khalil in Norfolk, Virginia. Khalil, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Martine Rothblatt, great fan of yours. Happy to talk. I think we're already kind of there in a rudimentary sense. It's not such a hard pill to swallow when you start to think about, say, massively multiplayer online games where character customization is a huge thing and it keeps getting more advanced. So, you know, these are not just characters. They're avatars. They're your representation of yourself in a completely different world that interacts with a whole, you know, upwards of 8 million, you know, player community, and obviously we're talking about something a little bit more advanced as far as mind clones go, but I think it's already kind of happening, and I think that the real crux is the whole immortality thing. Are we going to be able to save all of this data, and like you said, you know, you take the memories, you take you know, someone's sensibilities, their elements of their personality. I think all of this comes down to math. All of this it's just numbers. If you can save data, then you can replicate data. You can delete data. You can copy it. Are we going to be able to then take that data, transfer it back to someone in some sort of like cybernetic vessel, so to speak?
Khalil, may I ask you, because it sounds like you're well into the multiplayer game world and the rest, with that experience, does it feel credible to you that if you could just, you know, I mean, you may already create an avatar that's some version of yourself, that if you had enough data, do you feel that you would create or could create what you would be willing to call a clone of yourself, Khalil?
Absolutely. I mean, like, you know, this kind of goes along with an earlier call about, you know, how will your mind clone interact with you? I mean, I would love to log into a game and have my character literally walk up to the screen and say, hey, Khalil, how's it going? Let me tell you how many dragons I slayed today. And I'll say, hey, Mind Clone, well, that's really great. I went to work and, you know, did all this. Again, we're talking about, you know, it sounds silly because we're talking about games here, but honestly, like, these things are becoming so advanced to the point where, you know, at some point, I don't really see there being much of a distinction.
But Khalil, is it not sad? Is it not sad? Would it not be better to talk to your neighbor or your lover or a real person you're playing a game with?
I would honestly, I'd love to talk to everybody, Tom. I'd like to talk to everyone at the same time, and even my clone. And I'd like to talk to other people's mind clones with my mind clone and have, you know, all the mind clones talk to me together. Like, the whole point is these things are, I think it all comes down to what we're talking, when we're talking about consciousness, I think that comes down to mathematics. Just like there's a finite number of heartbeats in your life and a finite number of, you know, electrical impulses that are passed between your brain and the rest of your body. It's all just math. It's all just numbers. And whether you're talking about humans or, you know, some type of cyber being, I mean, even your emotions come down to, you know, biochemicals that are released in your brain and, you know, your body reacts to it a certain way. I mean, these are all things that are, they're already happening.
Khalil, we've got it. I'm the personality that I guess just pushes back on what feels like enormous reductionism there. On the other hand, you're right. The math gets bigger and bigger and bigger. I'm not sure where it ends. Khalil, thanks for your call. Martine Rothblatt's book is Virtually Human. Linda in Egg Harbor, Wisconsin. Linda, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My concern is having to do with manipulation and social control by power elite structures in the same way that data uploaded to the cloud is now available to everyone, the idea of fusion centers. I mean, this is no longer a matter of free will other than deciding to have a mind clone. But once the mind clone is created, isn't it just a mechanism for large-scale social control in the hands of who knows who?
Linda, I'm so glad you raised that because, Martine, let me put it to you. I mean, it's rough enough now with our organic biological minds. You know, we've got destructive memes out there. We've got propaganda and mindsets that we're vulnerable to. It's bad enough. If you could direct hack into one person's or everybody's clone mind. I mean, here's another listener online writes, just think of the chaos that could arise if someone hacked into a high-level official's mind clone. What about it, Martine?
So I'm really glad for Linda's question and you bringing that up. There's another chapter in Virtually Human devoted to exactly these questions of privacy versus manipulation, control, and things like that. It's really unfortunate that even the word hacker has become like misconstrued in the media as being a bad thing, because the hacker ethos is actually a very good ethos. It's an ethos against invading privacy and manipulation.
But
it's
that's not what Linda's talking about.
Yeah,
hacks can be very destructive too.
Yep, I know definitely what she's talking about. What we call and what I call in the book crackers are the people that crack these codes. So there will be a tension between privacy and security, and there will be settings that people control, much like we control our privacy settings on Facebook and any other social media. Some people will want their minds to be more open to others, just like some people share more openly with others. Others will want them to be very, very carefully guarded. I do believe that advances in encryption will outpace advances in de-encryption, and we will be able to have a pretty much of a surety of pure encryption. Now, there will be people that will not trust their state government, their federal government, and they will want to host their mind clones outside of the U.S. or outside of any jurisdiction that they live in, with, of course, a globalized information economy. That's perfectly possible. And if a person had those fears, they could host their mind clone outside of a country that they felt would make their mind clone subject to manipulation.
Martine, we've only got a minute. I have to say, I don't trust it. At bottom, I trust biological human obstinacy and urge for independence. Yes, we're vulnerable to propaganda and memes and all the rest, but You can put any security you like. It can be hacked. And I fear that this, to Linda's point, ends up with a population of consciousness that is unbelievably vulnerable to direct hacking and digital manipulation.
Well, I point out that one of the beauties about mind clones is it makes this kind of breaking into it actually, by definition, assault and battery, a crime. It's a crime upon a person. It's a battery on top of a person.
I would like more than law to protect ultimately the essence of humanity.
Yes, but law is a great place to start. Law is a great place to start.
Martine, you blow our minds in a really interesting way. Martine Rothblatt says it's inevitable. You can read it all in the new book, Virtually Human, The Promise and the Peril of Digital Immortality. Martine, thanks so much for your time and insights. Come back and talk to us again.
My pleasure, Tom.
Martine Rothblatt with us there from New York. Listeners, thanks for joining us in your singularity or your multiplicity. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.